AFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, 6 to 7 p.m.
Good evening and welcome to this Youth Day special show on the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm Nompumelelo Siziba. We have tailored this show specifically for the youth, but if you don't qualify as youth, don't worry, there are some gems of guidance in financial matters. From savings, investments, insurance, through to buying properties and even organizing a will, we're covering a number of bases that affect us in adult life. The MoneyWeb team has asked the youth to put questions to us around the financial issues they're grappling with or are curious about. And we have a team of experts in studio to break down some of the issues for us as best as they can. I'm joined in studio by Matthias Potrita. He's a debt expert from DebtSafe. John Manike, he's the head of financial education at Old Mutual. And Esther Ush, she's a product specialist from FNB.
All the day's business stories, weekdays from 6 p.m.
Well, the MoneyWeb radio team took to the streets of Johannesburg to get the thoughts and feelings of the youth on money and security matters.
Hi, my name is Tumi from Midrand. If there is one question I would like to ask the financial advisor, it will be how to avoid getting my credit record, getting messed up or being in debt at a very young age.
Hi, my name is Tiamo. I'm from Bloemfontein and I'm 23 years old. Eventually, I would love to buy a house and I do not want to get into debt. So I'm wondering what is the best way to build my credit score.
Okay, so in studio with me, I do have Matthias Potrita. He's a debt expert at DebtSafe. We have John Manike. He's head of financial education from Old Mutual. And Esther Oche, she's a product specialist from FNB. So let's start with Matthias. Matthias, very interesting questions asked by the youth there, specifically around, you know, building, ensuring that they don't get into bad credit or bad debt. What are your thoughts there?
Well, firstly, I think it is actually something that's quite positive that the youth is aware about a credit profile and a credit score and how it affects you, especially later on in your life. So the first thing is your credit score should be seen almost like if you're still in school or you just finished like your normal report to show history on how you have managed finances. Unfortunately, it's also counterintuitive. For you, in order to get a good credit score, you also have to add credit. So you need to build up a credit profile over time in order to show to credit providers that you can service a single debt and that gives you a credit score in the end. So very important thing is to keep a good credit score is to always honor your agreements, to make sure that you make timely payments, and that is very important.
Yeah.
That is basically the very first key thing when it comes to credit profiles and managing it is when you go into an undertaking with a credit provider, there's an agreement and you have to make sure that you pay on time and that you pay every month, basically. Just interesting stats, maybe, if I can just quickly share it. If we have a look at the National Credit Regulators, current stats, there's around about almost 26 million credit active consumers in South Africa, where more than it's 10.16 million has got impaired credit records, and that's almost 40%. So it shows that South African consumers are not really well at managing their credit profiles.
Yes.
And it's heartwarming to hear that the youth is aware of it and that they want to know on how to do that better.
So, John, in your view, the young lady from Bloemfontein, she asked the question, how do I build up my credit score? So how do you do it in a sensible way whereby you're able to keep up with your debts, but at the same time show that you're able to build up a credit score?
So I think first and foremost, I'd say you can live a dope life without having to rely on credit. I think they understand what I mean. I'm not sure if my co-guests understand.
dope is a big word, but I get that.
It's four letters.
Yeah. You know? So one is, I'd say, use credit responsibly and don't live a wow life on a low budget. Mm. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Esther, your thoughts?
So my thinking is very much, and to Tess's point, it's very encouraging to see the youth getting so conscious and so responsible with regards to debt. And, you know, to John's point as well, don't live above your means. It's very simple. If you can't afford to go out, don't go out. What do you call it? Call it the dope life. Don't live the dope. Somehow it doesn't get the same ring if I say it. You know, don't do that. Be exceptionally disciplined. How do you build up a credit record if you get given a cell phone contract or you apply for a cell phone contract? Make sure that you pay it off every month. If you go and get some sort of credit, be it at a financial institution, be it a retailer, don't maximize it in order to sort of keep up with the Joneses, because the truth is the Joneses are probably broke.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to try and keep up with them.
Just on that point, I think that there's nothing wrong with credit.
No, absolutely not.
It's how you manage credit. That is the big problem that we find in our industry as debt counselors. So people get scared of credit, but you shouldn't be scared of credit of the product. You should manage it better. That is the key thing, and to add to your point.
Yeah, I think there's a very big distinction between sort of good debt and bad debt. Yeah. You know, good debt is housing debt, where you're actually putting, and I think that goes to the next question that we're going to have, is putting a roof over your head, paying off a bond, that's good debt. Education debt is good debt to a much lesser, to a good extent. But, you know, to now suddenly go and get maximum amount of store cards, maximum amount of loans and all of those things at retailers, just so that you can try and have the image. That's the bad type of debt.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely wrong. Debt and the right type of debt can be very powerful.
Yeah.
So I want to jump in there because it just speaks exactly to what you've just raised just now. A young person, it's a reader question, basically she's asking the question, what are your thoughts about me going out and getting a 200,000 rand loan such that I can put down money on an investment so that, you know, the interest that I get or the returns that I can get will be much better than if I'm just putting maybe 2,000 rand away per month. How does that logic square up?
I wish the reader can see Esther's face. I think that basically sums up.
Yeah, so, okay, let's unpack it. So you're going to potentially take out a 200,000 rand loan. You're going to pay a particular interest rate at that. You're going to have to pay that interest rate. You know, that could be anything from 12, 15, 20, 24, 5%. That's the rate on that interest loan that you're going to get. There is no product at this moment in time on the market that can guarantee you that return. So let's unpack it a little bit more. If you go and lend money or borrow money at 15%, to get a guaranteed return, you're going to have to go for something like a money market fund. Your return's there at 7%. So you're actually technically losing 7% per year. So in the upper segments and the higher levels, when you have got a lot of money, yes, there are ways that you can do that and leverage it. But it's a long-term plan. In the youth market, don't do anything like that unless you've had proper financial advice, because there's a massive opportunity cost there.
So, John, it's a no-no.
Yeah, no, I like Esther's example there, because I think this talks to the concept of compound interest. Compound interest works both ways. It can work for you. It can also work against you. It depends. So if you're investing, yes, it works for you. But if you have borrowed money and you're paying money, you know, it could be working against you because you're actually paying somebody else that money. But what I think what is encouraging, though, is the recognition that credit, despite the stigma, you know, because the credit has been so stigmatized because of over-indebtedness to the extent where people think it's a bad thing. But actually, you must look at credit as a wealth creation tool. But it depends what you are buying when you're actually, or what you're using the money for.
Yeah.
For example, if you're using credit to buy property, then you know it, because it appreciates in value, it's a good debt.
Absolutely.
Yet again, if you don't pay that debt, it becomes bad very quickly again. It comes down to managing your finances and managing your debt.
Absolutely.
And sorry, I just want to say one more thing on that. Wealth creation is not driving a fancy car. Okay, so don't take out debt. That's not wealth. That's imaginary wealth.
That's not dope.
That's not dope. Yeah.
Well, the car is depreciating anyway, so you can't say that. And you do find that, guess what? With young people, the first thing, when they get a first job and they're thinking on something that they can use credit for, they would rather buy a car instead of buying property. So I think we need to change that actually, first and foremost, buy property, own a property, then the car will come later. But then, unfortunately, because we want to see that, we want our friends to see that, I'm lit, I'm happening.
Absolutely.
So, and then we end up going for...
We want to keep up with the Joneses or with the Ndlovus. All right, let me ask the next question from a reader. I'm 22 and working, currently saving around 1,500 rand a month towards a car. However, my Uber payments come to at least around 1,500 rand as well per month. I'm getting close to affording a down payment of 30,000 rand. Would it make sense for me to buy a car, factoring in petrol and insurance as well? Or should I keep taking Ubers but also keep saving to eventually put that money towards something else like a house?
That's a very clever 22-year-old. I'm actually quite shocked and surprised, but I love it. My very first opinion would be rather save up a bit more until you have a bit more room in your monthly cash flow, basically, because it is not just the 3,000 rand down payment on a vehicle. As she mentioned, there's insurance, there's petrol, there's toll fees, there is services that you have to think of, maintenance. So my personal advice will be at the moment is rather save up a bit more.
Yes.
And then make sure that when you have when you go into purchasing a vehicle, that you also have in your budget available those additional expenses that there will be. But that's a clever sum. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm actually
feel old because the you are teaching us quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm mentally trying to do the calculation in my head at the moment. I think I agree with Matthias. Maybe just save up a little bit more. Yes, it is an expense that's leaving you. You're not getting anything for it. But I agree, until you have enough wiggle room in your budget, don't go and buy a car.
Yes, okay. All right, let's move on now and perhaps listen to another question from the streets.
Hello, my name is Nalutando Jamini. I'm from Rosebank. And the question that I would ask is, how do I stretch the money that I have on a student budget?
I'm in studio with Matthias Potgieter. He's a debt expert at DebtSafe. John Manike, he's the head of financial education at Old Mutual. And Esther Oche, she's a product specialist at FNB. Any of you can take that question.
I want to jump on it.
Do you want to go first?
No, please go ahead.
I think time is money, even if you're a student. And we as South Africans, we are very creative individuals and we all have resources. So have a look at what is the resources that you have available that you can possibly increase rather than try and spread it. So if there's extra tutoring, or you can possibly do deliveries, or obtain an additional job, or if there's an oven, bake cookies and start selling it. So I think entrepreneurship is also something that's very important to start fostering at tertiary level as well as in high school. And to get people into that idea of starting to generate additional income. Mm-hmm. If we have a look at statistics at the moment, I don't think that in the next 5 to 10 years that individual will be able to survive on only one form of income. Mm-hmm. We will have to have additional incomes. And as a student, you have time. Stop being dope. I love this word. I'm going to use it for the rest of my life now. Invest your time and your energy and your effort in things that can generate additional income.
I think it's spot on, but I think just to add on there, make sure you make the right lifestyle choices, because when you are a student, there will always be peer pressure. You're going to see some of your peers possibly even driving a car. You know, you need to recognize the fact that you may be coming from different families,
yes,
and your financial strengths are not the same. So therefore, you don't have to compare yourself with anyone. Stay in your lane. You'll be fine. And I like also the suggestion of being a hustler. You need to hustle a bit. Try and find other means of actually generating some extra.
John, you really speak the lingo, the hustle, staying in your lane. Esther, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of these. Warren Buffett, he's the third richest man in the world. He very much says, look at other forms of income. And I think that goes to both John and Matthias's point, is don't try and rely on one form of income. But then the next thing, and this is a hard thing for a student to do specifically, is they need to look at what their needs and what their wants are. And I actually challenge the youth out there for a month to go and do what they call a spending tracker. So for a month, they literally check every time they spend money, they make a note of it. And it's going to be amazing where they're going to find where their spending leak is. And if you can't afford something, just don't do it. If you can't afford to, and I mean, this is a massive thing for students, is going out. My student life is very far behind, but I'm assuming it hasn't changed that much. That you'd want to go out and party every night. Don't do it.
Yes.
If you haven't got the money to do it, don't do it. And I think that's exactly to John's point. Don't try and keep up. Don't try and – you are from different backgrounds. But do that spending tracker for yourself. See where money is leaving your control. And it is literally that cup of coffee that you walk in, that you're buying on the way to res or to class in the mornings. That could be – $20 a day.
Yeah.
Multiply that over a month, that could be quite significant.
Exactly. And that would be quite easy to do, because these days we pretty much swipe.
Swipe everything, yes, and there's on the F&B app, there's quite a lack of ways to check it as well.
Okay, super. And then let me just find one more question around the whole student budget and living. There's one reader who asked the question, what's the fastest and most efficient way for me to pay off my student debt?
Well, there's two ways when we can have a look at paying off debt. They call it the avalanche method, or they look at the snowball method. So the snowball method is, as an example, you have three credit agreements. You have a look at the one with the lowest repayment amount, and you start paying and settling that debt as soon as possible. Then you take that repayment amount that you now actually would have saved, and you put it into the second debt profile or credit agreement, and you start seeing that snowball carrying on to get it off. The avalanche method is sometimes something that is a bit more tricky for people, because now they have to get into the details of their finances, and we all know the devil is in the details, and people actually don't like to do that. Is to have a look at all your credit agreements, and obviously have a look at the one that's got the highest interest rates, because that's where you actually are spending the most money on that credit, and start paying that one off first. For a student, it is about having that budget, yet again coming back to the basics and the basics of your finances. And when you enter into the job market and you get your first paycheck, not to, as John mentioned and Esther as well, not to run and immediately go and buy the vehicle, but see your credit agreement as your student loan as a first responsibility to pay that off before you start building luxuries like vehicles and all the other things. But especially if you sit with two or three credit agreements, maybe not only just a study loan, but maybe a personal loan as well, then start managing it according to either way that works for you best. There's never just one way of managing your finances. You have to find a fit that fits your personality and that fits your lifestyle.
Yeah, and to add on that, although I must say we strongly recommend that you attack your most expensive debt. Yes, it's easy to actually look at smaller debts, but they're not hurting you that much. But if you've got credit,
but isn't that the place where you're going to be paying the highest interest rates? That is your short-term loans.
So that's why you need to look at because it costs money to borrow money. So you need to look at where are you being charged more, and those are the ones that you need to be targeting. Secondly, you may want to put a plan in place to pay a little bit more than what's required. So you need to charge down your debt, because if you're going to be paying the minimum installment and you want to wait a full term, anything can happen in your life that requires money to be spent elsewhere, and therefore it disrupts your plan. So if you charge down your debt, then at least you're a bit far ahead, and even if something happens in your life that where there's an emergency that you have to use money, you're still on track.
So I'm going to be the controversial one. I'm going to say that I think a combination of the snowball and the avalanche method works the best. The advantage of that is if you pay the small, easy debts first, the $200 microloan or the $200 you owe your mate, you got that psychological effect of getting out of debt.
Yes.
And then attacking your highest interest rate. But the devil is in the detail. You're absolutely right. You need to sit down and have a good look at what your finances are. You need to check where the interest rates are, how much you're owing, and then make a plan and attack it and pay that extra in. Don't go out four times a month, go out twice a month, or go out once a month and put that extra money into your debt.
Yeah.
And also have short-term goals.
Short-term
that's achievable, long-term that's achievable. I think that is the most important thing when you go into a psychology of getting out of debt is to see that success and to feel and appreciate that. So short-term goals is important, and knowing what is your long-term goals as well.
You're absolutely right on that. Anything to do with a financial plan, whether it's getting out of debt, whether it's investing, whether it's going onto this whole financial wellness, it has to be a sustainable plan. We can't sit here and say to the youth today, listen, you're going to have to sit at home and knit every night and you can't go out. They're going to tell us we're a bunch of old toppies, first of all, and then we don't know what we're talking
about. Which planet are you coming on?
Yeah, we're not woke. I've got a new word.
That's it.
We're not woke.
So we need to say to the youth is, you know what? Don't go out four times, go out twice, or go out once. Or, do things that are sustainable that you can actually get out of debt. But you need to do it sooner rather than later.
Okay, super.